like to turn to the book of Luke, chapter 22. We've been looking at the miracle of the restoration of Malchus' ear, but we haven't got there yet, with events leading up to. But again, Luke's the only one that records the actual miracle. The other writers record the events leading up to it, including the severing of his ear. Luke is the only one who recorded the actual miracle, and that is in verse 49 through 51. When they which were about him saw what would follow, they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. Jesus answered and said, I believe to the one who cut off his ear, which was Peter, suffer ye thus far. And then he touched his ear and healed him. Back in John chapter 18, as review of last week, we see that Judas comes with his band of men. They have lanterns, they have swords, they have clubs. Again, they believe that Jesus would have to be captured, that Jesus would offer resistance, that he would have to be hunted down. And of course, they were wrong on all of those things, because Jesus simply presented himself. And in verse 4, Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth, that is, he went forth knowing what was coming next, and said unto them, whom seek ye? And they, of course, answered, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus revealed himself. He said, I am. And as a result, they went backward and fell to the ground. So Jesus is in complete control, absolute control. The 11 that are with Christ should certainly be able to see that Jesus is in control. Now, from all of this, there is a time in which evil is permitted to triumph, but that is limited by God. God's in control. Notice Luke 22, verse 53. Jesus said, when I was daily with you in the temple, ye stretched forth no hands against me. But this is your hour, talking to the band of men, talking to the wicked. This is your hour and the power of darkness. And though it was their hour, Jesus was in control. He was in absolute control. They could not do a single thing unless he permitted them to do so. We live in a day, of course, in which this is the hour of evil. This is the hour of wicked men. They cannot do anything outside of the Lord permitting them to do so. And whatever God permits them to do is within the realm of his will. And this is made very plain here in John chapter 18. Jesus would then say, if ye seek me, let these go. Talking concerning the 11. And again, that shows a characteristic of the work of Jesus Christ. He would surrender himself, and then others would be set free or be let go. So we see from this that God is sovereign over everything. The wicked can do nothing without God's permission. It is good for God's people to observe. Most of the time, God's people are oblivious to what is going on around them as how God is working. That should always be our concern, that we do not be oblivious, but that we're very aware of the working of God. Peter was not aware, because he would not have acted the way he did had he realized that the Lord was in complete control. But Peter didn't realize that. Even with when Jesus simply said, "I am," and they fell backwards, you would think right then it would cross your mind, wow, he's in control of this situation. I don't believe that thought ever crossed the mind of Peter in this particular event. So we want to look at the actual severing of the ear of Malchus, because there's much to be learned from the actual severing of his ear. Again, Peter is identified as the one who cut off the ear of Malchus. And that should be no surprise if, as you follow Peter's profile through the Gospels, that should be of no surprise to anybody. But Luke records that when the apostles realized that this band of men, approximately 500 men, were going to take Christ, notice in Luke 22, verse 49 again, they said unto him, "Lord, shall we smite with the sword?" Now, they had two swords. Verse 38. And they said, "Lord, behold, here are two swords." And he said unto them, "It is enough." Peter, obviously, was carrying one of the swords. We have no idea who was carrying the other. But there were two swords. And they asked Christ, "Shall we smite with a sword?" You know, a lot of God's people do this. They ask a question to the Lord. They ask concerning the will of the Lord, but they don't wait for the answer. And that was Peter. And this isn't the first time. It was about this time when they asked the question that someone, or perhaps several, no doubt Malchus was one, if perhaps the only one, reached forth to take Jesus. And Peter, in his zeal is not always a good thing, and without waiting for Jesus' answer to the question, "Shall we smite with the sword?" he wielded his sword, I believe, with the intent of beheading Malchus. But due to the sovereign power of God, he missed and cut off his ear. May I say, had he not missed and cut off his head, the Lord could have restored his head also. But I believe Peter's intent was not to just simply cut off the ear of Malchus. I believe his intent was to cut off his head. But God directed, because he's in complete control here, directed the sword, and it sliced off the ear of Malchus. Notice in Matthew 26, verse 50 and verse 51. And Jesus said unto him, "Friend," talking about Judas, "friend" was spoken kind of in a sarcastic way, "wherefore art thou come?" Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them, which were with Jesus, stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Notice in Mark chapter 14, we see each writer records the severing of the ear. In verse 46, and they laid their hands on him and took him, and one of them that stood by drew a sword and smote a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. We've already read there in Luke chapter 22 and verse 50, and one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. And in John chapter 18, John chapter 18 and verse 10. Up to this time, we do not know who cut off his ear, nor do we know the name of the one whose ear was cut off. But John 18, then Simon, in verse 10, then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it. So he had a sword. He had one of the two swords. And smote the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Now, you don't hear a whole lot about this incident, but there are a lot of valuable lessons by way of warning in what Peter has done. Again, we have to put all this in the context of what is going on. Christ has already manifested very clearly. He has all through his earthly ministry, but he has, at this particular incident, manifested very clearly that he is in complete and absolute control of the situation. Yet Peter, in his zeal, took matters into his own hands without considering the will of the Lord. Because again, they asked the question, shall we smite with sword? But as soon as that individual reached forth, Peter didn't wait for an answer. He took action. He took matters into his own hands. And it is always dangerous. Get that. It is always, underline, underscore, it is always dangerous to take matters into our own hands. The sooner we realize that truth, the better off we are. I don't know that Peter ever grasped that truth, but perhaps he did after his denials in the book of Acts. But Christ lovingly rebuked Peter for this action. And notice, again, we see the rebuke is recorded by Matthew, it's recorded by Luke, it's recorded by John. And notice the rebuke in Matthew 26, verse 52 through 54. Then said Jesus unto him, this is after he smote the ear, verse 51. Put up again thy sword into its place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father? Peter, don't you realize that I'm in control of this situation? This is what he's saying here in verse 53. Thinkest thou that I cannot pray to my Father? I mean, it's almost as if the Lord is amazed at Peter's thought process. Thinkest thou not? Peter, hasn't it crossed your mind that I'm in control? And he shall presently give more than 12 legions of angels. But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled? That thus it must be. Peter didn't understand this. He never grasped it. It goes back to Matthew 16, when Jesus explained to the apostles what was going to come pass, that he was going to be crucified, that he was going to rise again. He explained it to them, and Peter rebuked him. Peter never did grasp this, that these things must be. And the reason Peter did not grasp it is because he didn't agree with it. And we'll see that a little later. But notice In, again, if we go back to Luke chapter 22, verse 51, and Jesus answered and said, "Suffer ye thus far." That is, Peter, put away your sword, permit this. Because it must be. Because it must be. This is God's will. John 18. John 18. Verse 11. Then said Jesus unto Peter, "Put up thy sword in the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" He's saying to Peter, "Peter, put away your sword. Peter, if you think this is the way, that is, by that sword, that you will be protected, you are wrong." And then he again reiterated, whether Peter understood it or not, that all of this that was happening was necessary for the work of God, for the work that God the Father had given Christ to do. The truth is, Peter had never truly surrendered to the truth that Christ revealed to him again back in Matthew 16, verse 21. Christ, you have a contrast here. You have Christ. He, of course, is perfectly surrendered to God's will. You have Peter, who was not. Peter was not. And as a result, Peter acted from a zeal without knowledge. He had a zeal. No one can deny that. But it was a zeal without knowledge. And in unconsidered haste, he acted. That's very dangerous. That's dangerous. And again, it's always dangerous. Peter's behavior at this time was emotion-driven. He could not stand the thought of them taking Christ. And what he did was emotionally driven. That'll most of the time get you in trouble. It was completely reactionary, what Peter did. And though Peter no doubt loved the Lord, there's no doubt in my mind that Peter loved the Lord. In fact, one of Peter's problems was that he thought he loved the Lord more than anybody else. And that's what Jesus said when he asked him, "Lovest thou me more than these?" He's not talking about the fish. He's going back to the statement that Peter had made, that though all men deny thee, I never will, Lord, because I love you more than anybody else. And he asked him, "Do you love me more than these, Peter? These apostles?" And all he could say was, "Lord, thou knowest that I love thee." So we do not bring into question Peter's love for the Lord. And to me, I do not even question, I believe that Peter wanted what was best for the 11. He wanted what was best for the Lord. With all that being said, his behavior brought harm and destruction. It brought harm and destruction. Sure, the Lord fixed it. But it brought harm and destruction. Really, Peter's failure goes back to Matthew 26, verse 41, when Jesus said to them, "Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. For the spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." There's much danger in not giving heed to those words. We see from Peter's action that it takes more than excitement to serve the Lord. Peter was excited here. It takes more than zeal. It takes more than good intentions to do what God requires. Now, this was not the first time that Peter acted with an unwise zeal and hastiness. As you look at Peter, he was a very impulsive person throughout the Gospels. Matthew 16, verses 21 through 23. We'll not turn there to save time. But again, Christ said, I must needs go through Jerusalem. And he began to explain to the apostles why he had to go to Jerusalem and what was going to transpire when he got there, that he would be crucified, that he'd be arrested, that he'd be crucified. Peter actually believed that he knew better than the Lord. He actually believed that because he took the Lord to the side and rebuked him. Rebuked him. Because Peter just knows what's best. I mean, you follow him through the gospel, he just always knows. Or so he thinks. But he rebuked the Lord. And what did the Lord say? Get thee behind me, Satan. Now, when Peter did that, did Peter love the Lord? Yes, he did. Did Peter want what was best? Yes, he did. But you follow through the Gospels, there is no apostle more rebuked by the Lord than Peter. No one is more rebuked than Peter. Because Peter has this habit. He just takes matters into his own hands. He's always the spokesman. He's always speaking up throughout the Gospels. And we see it here in the garden that night. He also manifested his impulsiveness on the Mount of Transfiguration. Notice in Matthew 17. Matthew 17. We don't have time, but you can read the first five verses. The Lord has revealed himself. There's also Moses and Elijah on that mountain. And in verse 4, then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it's good for us to be here. That is, Lord, just in case if you don't know, I want you to know it's good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make here three tabernacles, one for thee, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. You say, well, what's wrong with that? Verse 5, while he yet spake, while Peter was speaking, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, and I believe this is mostly for Peter, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. It was as if that voice said, just again, Peter said, let's make three tabernacles, one for Christ, one for Moses, one for Elijah. And it's as if that voice said, hold on, Peter. There's a problem here. Moses and Elijah are not Christ's equal. This is my beloved Son, referring to Christ. Peter, listen to him. Listen to him. Then you have on the night of the Passover, Jesus was washing the feet of the apostles, John chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. And when he came to Peter, Peter said, no way are you washing my feet. No way. Again, Peter actually thinks that he knows better than the Lord. Lord, no way are you washing my feet. And we see this characteristic of Peter throughout the Gospels. And now we come to the night of Christ's arrest. And Peter, once again, reacts with unwise zeal and in much haste. And this action of Peter, along with the personal profile of Peter, serves as a warning. Again, Peter loved the Lord. Peter was a very valuable servant. Very valuable servant. But he was the most rebuked of the apostles of the Lord. And Peter, without a moment of hesitation, without waiting for Christ's answer to the question, swung the sword, cut off the ear of Malchus, took matters into his own hands, and it caused some damage. And I dare say it always does. We may not always be aware of it. And the Lord might fix it, but he might not also. And then next week we'll get into how Christ restored Peter's ear. Let's look to the Lord.